Good morning. Thursday, June 10th, 2010. I'm reading from a New Jersey newspaper last week. Headline: New Jersey prison inmate is accused of ordering a hit on his girlfriend from jail. And in fact, this inmate was serving, I think, 47 years. His girlfriend testified against him during the course of that trial. And consequently, he secured a contraband cell phone and asked his brother and a friend to kill her. And it appears as though, in fact, they did, unfortunately. And these are the types of things we're trying to do to prevent this type of behavior from people who are incarcerated in our institutions. I want to thank the National Institute of Justice for inviting us to participate in this discussion. I also want to thank, and there's more people than I can think of to thank, and I want to thank them because I'm pleased we're beyond the barrier of not talking about this topic. The staff at the FCC, the staff at the NTIA, many of whom I've met, but not recently enough to remember all their names, as well as governors and congressmen, congresswomen, and senators around the country who've now taken an interest in this important topic. And we appreciate that NIJ has facilitated us in that discussion. So thank you, because we are now to the point where we can have an educated discussion about strategies and the many strategies that are available to help limit inmates' access to contraband cell phones. And it's a bit ironic, I think, for many of you who work in corrections, me standing before you talking about things that limit communication when, in fact, we all know that we run safe and secure prisons and jails, both at the federal, state, and local level, by effective communication between staff and inmates, between staff and the public, between inmates and their families. But without a doubt, we have to do that in a controlled, monitored way to do it safely and securely. So we encourage inmate communications, but only through appropriate strategies and methods. For example, inmates in the Federal Bureau of Prisons can use the inmate telephone system at rates of 6 cents a minute for local calls, and 23 cents a minute for long-distance calls to contact family and friends in the community. They can use this system through debit cards, and calls are normally 15 minutes in length. So even a long-distance phone call, about $3.45, gives them a 15-minute long-distance phone call. They also have, most inmates have unlimited mail use and have opportunities to visit family and friends in visiting rooms through contact visits and as long as they behave. And in those cases where they haven't behaved, sometimes through monitored visiting either over closed-circuit TV or non-contact visits. Our problem in corrections is that we struggle for the balance between encouraging communications and maintaining community ties as important aspects of inmate reentry back into our communities, on the one hand, and maintaining safe and secure institutions on the other. We monitor inmates' communications in both terms of transitional monitoring, who they're calling, as well as for substantive information, what is the content of the call. Contraband cell phones obviously allow inmates to make unmonitored calls and seriously threaten institution security as well as public safety. Cell phones enable inmates to make unmonitored calls that thereby allow them to engage in activities that they would likely be discovered if they used the traditional methods of communication within our prisons and jails. These activities include maintaining gang networks, threatening witnesses, introducing drugs and other dangerous contraband into prisons and jails, planning escapes, and the list goes on and on and on. Undoubtedly, and I think this is probably where it's a bit confusing for some, that inmates do use the phone calls for contacting family and other friends, trying to do so in a unmonitored way given their extreme concerns over privacy and the difficulty of communicating with a family member when they know someone else may be listening. I have a solution for that. Don't go to prison. Don't break the law. But we believe this is the rare case and that the majority of the cases involve inmates willing to go to the trouble of breaking the law and taking the risk of getting phones, cell phones, into institutions and conduct illegal activities. Every year we discover thousands of cell phones in our facilities. You're saying, geez, thousands. How can that occur? We're a large system, 212,000 inmates, 115 federal prisons that we own and operate, 14 large private contracts, and 300 contracts for residential reentry centers. But it really doesn't matter, large or small, the consequences are the same. Jeopardizes our institution's safety and security, and without a doubt, jeopardizes public safety in our communities. We too, as Mr. Maynard described, continue to investigate technologies that detect cell phones. We use metal detectors on visitors and staff to try to eliminate cell phone introduction into the institutions. We rely on our traditional methods of identifying contraband in institutions through staff searching inmates, cell searches, searches of common areas, and the traditional strategies. A few examples of how phones get into facilities: bags of phones thrown over fences. And you can see here bags of phones have been collected, thrown over fences. Along with those phones, you'll see some other contraband, such as protein pills and things of that nature that are being sold to inmates. Again, this is this is how the inmates were hiding the phones in their cells, certainly. And then move on to the next one. Just a little headline about, unfortunately, we all employ people on occasion who break the rules, who break the law. It's unfortunate, tragic. Fortunately, it's a very small percentage of our employees, but I am sure exists in virtually every correctional system and jails across the country. And we do our best to identify and detect and investigate staff who misbehave in this way and remove them from the service. And again, I think the next one is a few examples of how they hide them in the prison. You can see behind in the wall, inside a calendar or a book. And the next slide, again, some books. And, of course, in the body. So here's a case where the individual hid the cell phone in a body cavity. We have had some success using radio frequency detection, which allows us to detect cell phones in use. But the technology is expensive, and hardware is very intensive. It's also obvious that inmates could be aware of that, so they're not completely stupid. They only use the phones for a brief period of time and then hide the phone, so it's very difficult to detect the phone. It's impossible to detect the phone with this technology when it's not on. We've been working with the NIJ for about 10 years to investigate other technologies that exist, and we've found none of them that are really all that effective, and some are very, very expensive. Given the difficulty of preventing introduction of cell phones, there's been a lot more interest in developing cell phone jamming techniques. It's a complicated process that we are optimistic we can continue to test and evaluate. When we talk about cell phone jamming techniques, we're talking about spoofing or brute force jamming. And spoofing is a sophisticated method of making the caller think that he or she has reached a real network, but in fact has only reached a box that tells the caller that no service is available. The caller does not realize that the no service message is not real. And brute force jamming occurs when the area within the institution is inundated with lots of concentrated radio frequency energy, which prevents the phone calls from going through. There are consequences of that, without a doubt. We want to make sure whatever we do is in the best interest of the public, to protect cell phone usage outside that prison, but limit it inside the prison, and we're hopeful that through these opportunities to explore, we'll figure out some of those opportunities. A new frontier for us, the last slide there, I threw it up there, is a cell phone forensic analysis, that when we find the cell phone, what can we learn from that cell phone and who the inmate has called, what they've said, what they've stored. This is extremely valuable to monitoring and managing gangs and other disruptive inmates in prisons, as well as offering opportunities for public safety staff in the community to further investigations from the information, FBI, state police, local police, whoever it is, that might find that information of value to them during their investigations on other illegal activities. So, again, we can talk more about that if you have questions, but I don't want to take up any more time. Again, thanks again. Cell phones are not going to go away or go away easily. We are not able to find every cell phone introduced into an institution. We're not going to be able to jam every single signal. But we certainly want to continue to look for solutions. We thank again NIJ, NTIA, and others for their partnership in this. We appreciate the hard work you're doing, given the fact this is critically important for protecting not only our institution's safety and security, but also public safety. So again, thank you very much.